The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be a part of the show. In our last three episodes, we talked with an IT service provider who opened his own computer store, learned how he did it, and what you need to consider before making that move from working out of your house to opening a storefront of your own. Today we'll continue our discussion with him and find out how setting up a real brick-and-mortar store can make your business profitable, if you do it right. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. WorkMarket, the new online web-based service platform created by OnForce founder and former CEO Jeffrey Leventhal, will host weekly webinars to introduce users to the platform. WorkMarket will host two webinars each week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Each 30-minute webinar will educate users about the basics of using the platform and include an open question and answer session. WorkMarket is currently in beta and is scheduled for launch in late spring of 2011. Techs are invited to test the beta version of the platform. To register for a webinar, visit www.workmarket.com. Eric Castro has left Service Live for WorkMarket. Eric, who was interviewed on the Force Field in episode 36, Profit from the Service Platform, was formerly Director of Channel Management at Sears Holding Corporation, the company behind ServiceLive.com. He recently joined the WorkMarket platform as Vice President of Client Services. When I want to conduct a meeting, I prefer to do it from the comfort of my home office. It saves time, gas money, and, well, sometimes I just don't like to have to get up and go out anywhere. That's why I like GoToMeeting. With GoToMeeting, it's just like we're all in the same room. We can chat, conduct training sessions, and share content with ease. It saves everyone time, money, and no one actually has to drop everything else and leave their home or office to get there. GoToMeeting offers unlimited meetings for one flat rate, which means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself, free, for 30 days. 1 month of unlimited online meetings, free. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST. Seagate unveiled the world's first 3.5-inch hard drive featuring 1 terabyte of storage capacity per platter. In a press release dated May 3rd, the company said their GoFlex Desk products are the first to feature the new hard drive, featuring storage capacities of up to 3 terabytes and an areal density of 625 gigabytes per square inch. Seagate said the new drives will be shipped to the distribution channel in mid-2011. And finally, Barrister Global Services may be countering complaints against them from frustrated and angry techs with a few complaints of their own. Barrister, which claims to be the oldest and largest woman-owned IT service company, now has several blogs on the internet created in its name in an attempt to debunk negative comments posted on various blogs and complaints boards against the company by unhappy techs. It's no secret that Barrister has an image problem with field service technicians who contract with him. A Google search on any given day will pull up page after page of comments, complaints, and tirades against the company posted on consumer complaint sites, blogs, and tech forums by frustrated and angry service technicians, mostly related to the company's growing reputation among the tech community for unreasonably slow or complete non-payment for services rendered. At least two of these blogs were purportedly created by someone named Jessica, who, according to her own profile, seems to be employed by Barrister. One of these Barrister blogs, called Barrister Global Services Network Complaints Scam, was apparently set up on the popular blogging service Blogger sometime last August. The last entry in the blog appears to be as recent as March. In this blog, Jessica slams the techs who posted complaints about Barrister and asserts that all of the comments calling Barrister Global Services a scam are fake. Unfortunately, due to the poor grammar used in the blog posts, the blog itself comes across as somewhat questionable. With all of the grammatical errors, it's difficult to take the blogger seriously. Add to that the assertion that all the complaints made by their detractors are fake, without any real explanation as to how the blogger arrived at that conclusion, well, that comes across as unprofessional at the very least. But Jessica provides no evidence whatsoever to back up her statement or explain how she determined that the complaints against Barrister were fake. Without such evidence to corroborate her statements, how do we know she's right? Do we simply take her at her word? Ironically, I recently ran across an article called Strong Building Blocks, written in February by CRN writer Chad Bernstein, in which he praised Barrister for its moxie, its ability to survive various setbacks in the company's history. It was essentially a promotional piece that touted Barrister's success. It seemed rather self-indulgent to me. I was a subscriber to CRN for years. It's a trade publication, originally known as Computer Reseller News. I considered it a good source of news about trends in the industry, and it was a way for me to keep up with what other system builders and computer resellers were up to. I understand that trade publications are in the business of promoting IT companies, not tearing them down. I don't expect them to be particularly unbiased when it comes to promoting companies to clients, vendors, or potential partners. But this is different. This is Barrister. Isn't CRN aware that Barrister has an image problem with its service suppliers, the techs? Well, apparently not. And, apparently, neither do some of Barrister's clients. There's a question often posed by techs who claim to have been burned by Barrister and lament about it in their posts on the various complaint boards, blogs, and forums. They wonder how a company that treats the technicians with such disregard can stay in business all these years and continue to keep their clients happy in the long term. Well, based on the CRN article and a few other sources, it seems Barrister has two faces, one for their clients and one for their service providers. On one hand, if you read the CRN article, the face the clients seem to see is an old, well-established, stable company that does not ignore the clients and will do what it takes to get the job done. On the other hand, there have been a lot of unhappy techs out there who say they are, or were, contracted by Barrister under draconian terms and otherwise treated poorly. They also say the company is slow to pay, if it pays at all, once the job is done. A number of techs, many of whom are members of the force field, have done business with Barrister Global Services and have proved themselves to be reputable sources of information. Ask any of those techs if they would do business with Barrister today, and, with very few exceptions, they would probably answer almost unanimously with a very emphatic no. They may show their best face to their clients, but the techs tell a different story. It doesn't matter if the story is true or not. The fact is, Barrister has an image problem, and their blogs only confirm it. This is an excellent lesson for every tech business, and every other business, about the use of blogs to promote their company or improve poor customer relationships. Blogs can be very powerful tools in the management of public relations, if handled competently. But they can also reinforce a negative image, if handled poorly. A company's public image is formed by the perception or impression one receives of that company. It isn't created by the public. It's created by the company itself. It's how the public views that company based on that company's actions. These actions are based on the attitude that company has towards their customers, their vendors, everyone that company interacts with. Yes, I said attitude. If the attitude is one of respect for others, the company will create a positive image of itself. If the attitude is one of disregard or disdain, the image created will be a negative one. A company's public image is formed from within. If your company has an image problem, there is an obvious reason for it. It isn't your customer's fault. It's yours. That's the bad news. But this is also good news. Your company created that image. That means your company controls it. Because it controls that image, it can change it. To change your image, the first thing you need to do is change your attitude. Now, if I were a barrister and I wanted to create a blog for my business to resolve a negative PR issue and do damage control to my company's reputation, spamming the internet with multiple crybaby blogs is definitely not the way to go. Instead, I would first make an effort to acknowledge the issue, engage in real constructive dialogue with the dissenting text to find out why the complaints exist, and then commit myself to doing whatever I could to rectify the cause of the complaints and improve my relationship with those texts who are unhappy in a genuine, honest attempt to set things right. That's how you fix an image problem. Many companies have done it and have often turned disgruntled detractors into loyal defenders. It's all about changing a company's attitude, respect, and approach. Unfortunately, the person who created these barrister blogs thought it best to take the low road instead and went after the techs who complained about them, engaging in an online smear campaign in an obvious attempt to paint the detractors as some sort of organized effort by competitors to take barrister down. Instead of trying to fix a PR problem by communicating with techs thoughtfully, rationally, and in a respectful way, they are trying to make themselves look like the victims and discredit their detractors. This may be the modus operandi in political arenas, but in the business world, it is a very bad move. It just makes barrister look vindictive, unprofessional, and, worse, serves to only affirm the claims made about the company by those who complain. The real question is this. Are these barrister blogs just defensive responses created independently by a frustrated barrister employee? Or are they real blogs founded and sanctioned by Barrister Global Services itself? If it is the former, Barrister may need to check into this to ensure that these blogs do not damage their already questionable reputation among the techs further. If it's the latter, well, I think the blogs only add fuel to the fire. Because, in the process of trying to discredit the techs who they've already burned, they are only burning themselves. And that's the news in the force field. Usually we have a commercial break where we showcase a specific, personally approved sponsor. This week we're going to take a break from that and spend a minute or two getting to know the forcefield.net. Although it is the official home of the Forcefield podcast, it is really much more. It's a web portal with news, blogs, resources, and reviews from inside the IT industry. The forcefield.net is intended to be a starting point in the search for resources to help techs learn the business of starting and managing a tech business. There's the latest news releases from major tech companies, reviews of new products and services, blogs and discussions about trending topics in tech fields, and sources of information for learning the ins and outs of the IT industry. The forcefield.net also features the Forcefield Forums, a community of techs who collaborate, support one another, and discuss the issues vital to their businesses. In addition, there are articles, books, videos, and access to free industry trade publications, such as periodicals, ebooks, and white papers, all there to help you learn more about the business of tech. The heart of the portal, however, is the IT Business Resource Directory. It contains a list of distributors, vendors, trade organizations, contractors, and other contacts, as well as financial, legal, and technical resources. Tools you need to help you start and manage your tech business, and is available to all registered members. For instance, the Directory of Distributors is a list of suppliers who wholesale goods to resellers and computer shops for resale to consumers and end users. The National Contractor Directory is a list of companies who subcontract work to field service technicians and is the largest and most comprehensive known list of its kind available on the net today. This directory includes contact information for techs who are looking for field work as independent contractors. Techs can rate and review these companies as well, providing valuable feedback as to which companies are best to work for and which to avoid. Most of the resources inside the force field are accessible to members only. However, membership is free. To join, simply register at www.theforcefield.net. Join today and build your business inside the force field. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8, that's 407-278-5698, or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast Episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't be free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last three episodes of the Force Field, we talked with Pat Palmer, an IT professional who owns and operates The Computer Guy, a computer store located in Hampton, Iowa. In part one, we learned how he opened his store, how he made the decision to jump from a home office to an actual storefront, and the considerations he made in staffing it properly. We also discussed why a daily commitment to attendance and punctuality is vital to its success. In part two, we discussed the advantages of having a storefront, the disadvantages of having one, and important things to consider when renting or leasing the space to set it up. In part three, we learned how he utilized floor space in more than one way to maximize his investment, some of the costs involved in setting up the store, and how inventory management can make or break your bottom line. Today we'll conclude our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened his store. We'll learn how important it is to find the right location for your store, how hiring employees can make or break the operation, and how having a storefront can legitimize your business as we continue with part four of our six-part series on opening a computer store. And we're back with Pat Palmer. Pat, welcome back to the Force Field.
Well, thank you very much, Rick.
Pat, we were talking about all the factors in making that decision, that initial decision in starting and opening a computer store, an actual physical storefront. You know, we've all heard that line, location, 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 but just how important is it to find the right location for your store?
Well, in our town, it was, if I couldn't be on Main Street, I could be right off of Main Street, and that's pretty much how it happened. There was a store location available for $800 a month, which probably would have been nice, but my location was available for $300 a month. And so it was kind of customizable the way I wanted to do it. So I picked the way I did just because I knew I could customize it a lot better and make it fit. The landlord was going to be a lot more flexible. I knew him a little bit better, and it just worked. I know, you know, I wouldn't, if I was looking at another location, like I've said several times, thinking about expanding to the town north of me, there's just so many places I wouldn't want to be that outnumbers the places I would want to be. There was a place I was looking at, and I drove by it. I bet I drove by it 100 times until I finally figured out, wait, there's no parking. And, yeah, there's parking in the mall parking lot across the street, but how am I supposed to expect an elderly lady or elderly man or somebody who has some mobility issues to cross a busy highway with a computer in their hand?
Yeah.
You know, right now I've got, except for the Yukon that seems to always find its way in front of my store every day because the lady next door doesn't know how to park in the back, I've got, you know, street parking, which is, you know, 10 feet from my door, and if I see him pull up, you know, I can always run out and get their computer from them. That's not a problem. Or if they call ahead, I'm going to be bringing a computer. Can you help me out? Sure. Well, in this other town, you know, crossing a busy highway and parking in the mall parking lot, that had been, you know, that had been like walking the computer a block away, and you definitely want to have convenience for the customer on your side, or else they'll go somewhere else where it is convenient.
Right. Yeah, that's well, that's true. Yeah, and, you know, as far as what I did when I was scouting around for locations, and I spent quite a bit of time doing that, there was another location that I wanted to get into that was a little bit closer to the main street, and it wasn't available at the time. So I had to find an alternate location. Well, the location that I found, it was another spot that I thought, well, okay, this might be a good place for a computer store. It wasn't right on the main road, but I really kind of lucked out there in the sense that it turns out that the previous tenant had a computer store there and had been there for quite a while. And he had retired. And actually what he had done is he had retired and he'd given it to his son to manage. But his son was very young, and he was a bright tech. As I recall, he was a very, very good tech. However, he was more interested in partying and having fun than running a computer store. So he just closed it up and said, I'm not doing this, and took off. So when I got that location and I moved in, right away, I had traffic because people knew there was a store there, had known there was a store there, and I picked up a lot of his old customers. Because I just moved right in. That was a nice transition.
Yeah, a storefront just closed south of me, in the town south of me, and I always heard that if you want to, you know, get their customers, offer to buy their old phone number. Well, that might work in some cases, but this guy was rather put off by it, and he didn't want to sell me his phone number. So, but yeah, I know that it's handy if you've, I know several friends of mine have had took over places where there'd been a computer person there before. And the nice thing about it, your cables are run, and you've probably got, you know, some equipment to back. Maybe they're just going to leave for you. And that's a handy thing.
Yeah, that does help a lot. It really does. Pat, overall, what do you think was the easiest part of setting up your store?
Oh, the easiest part was the support I had. Boy, I had a lot of support. Everybody just seemed to be rooting for me in town, and through, you know, the social media things, people are just, I take pictures now and then and post, and people just say, I can't wait, and, you know, you're going to be an added asset to downtown. And, you know, my prospective employee, you know, he knew I was going to do it, and he knew I was going to hire him, and he was just waiting for the day when he could just put the resignation on his boss's desk too. And it's just the support I got made a lot of it easier. If I didn't have the support from my friends and family, I don't know if I'd have gone through with it, because it kind of takes a village in this case to make something like this work. And I knew I had the chamber director and the FCDA, the development director. They'd gone to bat for me with the bank, and I had the support of two college entrepreneur programs. And just the support I had really made it easier. It didn't pay the bills any quicker, but it kind of gave you that feather in the cap that, no, you knew it was going to go. Yeah. And even today, you know, there's challenges today. I mean, there's challenges every day when, you know, you're face-to-face with a customer that's not happy. You know, you have those. And so it's just the day-to-day challenges of this and that, but it is so much rewarding when you get an email after work at 9 o'clock at night that says, hey, I was in your store today and your employee went above and beyond what I thought he needed to do to help me out, and it just wasn't all about making money. And then I think, yes, that's when I did it right. You know, when my employee can care just about as much about the business as I do, you've got a good employee. He's never going to care as much, or you should be caring about your business more than your employee, but when they're on the same page with you on that, that's a good feeling too. And that's probably where I've got the easiest part, is an employee that really, really cares and really goes the extra mile and does research for me in his off time. Hey, we can get this product or that product a little cheaper than what you might be getting it for. Or if we bought in bulk, we could do this, you know, that type of thing. So the employee has been probably the easiest and the hardest part of the thing, because I've got a good employee that makes things easy. The hard part is, know, I told somebody the other day, was I said, my first commitment every month is to make sure my employees paid. And they really couldn't figure that out. But I said, he's what makes it. If I didn't have my employee, I'd be stuck in here like a McDonald's order taker, and I wouldn't be out seeing anybody.
That makes all the difference. Your employee can make or break the operation. Everything can. It's one more part of the operation, one more important piece of it. And you need all the pieces to make it work well. But having a good employee, and, you know, good help is hard to find these days. But when you can find someone who is that loyal and conscientious and doing all the right things for your business, that's someone worth holding on to. That's very, very important.
Yeah, it's just my competitors say, you know, I wouldn't have an employee because you're just going to train him to go work somewhere else. Well, that's the risk you take. You take your risk every day of your life. And so if you keep your employee happy enough and paid well enough or paid, you know, agreeably paid, then he shouldn't have to, they shouldn't have to worry about, you know, going anywhere. But
treat them right. Just treat them right.
Yeah. And if it means, you know, a little extra here, a little extra there, or going the extra mile. I always liked it when I was an employee, if my boss cared. I worked for bosses who didn't care, and I know they didn't get my 100%. So I'm hoping that I'm getting his 100%. I think I am.
It sounds like it. Sounds very much like it. What do you think was the most difficult part of setting up and running the store?
Probably understanding all of the new insurance fees and the new payroll taxes and a lot of things in doing business right, the right way. I always said the quickest way to go out of business is to cheat the government. And so, the insurance is paid and, you know, the proper taxes are taken out of the employee's paycheck. Convincing people that you're here and you're here to stay and you're downtown, I mean, it's a big leap of faith, that's for sure. But if you do it right, it pays off, that's for sure. But, you know, if you do it wrong, it still may pay off if you're the only one in town.
Well, looking back, I know you've learned a lot from this experience. I know I've learned a lot from my experiences in setting up a computer store. And I have my own thoughts on this, but looking back from your perspective, is there something that you would have done differently or not at all?
If I look back at it, maybe I'd have done it earlier. Maybe I'd have done it in July of 2008. I don't know. That would have been the next thing is when, but I think the time, I could not have waited another year. I would have probably have had more problems and lost more customers if I would have waited another year because I would have been too busy. I'm becoming that way now in another market where I'm pretty stretched to the limits on servicing people north of me, and so we're going to have to make another decision one of these days on starting another store up in northern Iowa in Mason City, and that's what I'm wrestling with right now. It's still cheaper to run it out of my car, that's for sure. It always is going to be. But if you want to provide the customer service like customers need it nowadays and thank them for walking in and thank them for walking out and all sorts of things that go with it, and finding another employee as good as the one I have now, it's going to have to happen for me down the road. I just need to know when to pull the trigger on that one. I hope it doesn't take me as long as I did on this one.
So overall, do you think it's been worth the investment?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, just for the people's sake, it's really kind of legitimized my business, not that it wasn't before, but there's a difference between working out of your basement and working downtown, and there's nothing against working out of your basement. I want to say that for the people who are on the fence about it, there's nothing wrong with that, but you will be considered more legitimate if you do have a shop set up. I mean, I don't want to, you know, take away from anybody who's making a successful living in their garage or in their basement or whatever. But, and for me, it seemed to bring it to me another level of professionalism, you might say. So that really helped me personally. So it really, because in our town, home-based businesses aren't really, you know, we're a member of the chamber and we're, you know, a member of this and member of that, but you're really kind of looked upon as, oh, that's just a hobby. Mm-hmm. So for my town and my example, your mileage may vary depending on where you're at, but that's kind of the way it was here. Now that I'm downtown, it just really brings forth that I'm now a business.
Well, Pat, I really appreciate your time and your insight on this, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. I'm sure we've all learned something new from this. I always learn something new from talking to others. I get a different perspective. I mean, I have my own, you know, thoughts based on my own experiences with it, but it's always great to get a different perspective on it. And you know, I think that if you have more than one perspective on this particular topic, I think you get a, it helps you make a better informed decision on whether or not to actually make that leap, or when to make it, or how to do it. I certainly hope our listeners are not afraid to do it if they want to do it, but you know, just to keep in mind that that's a lot more than just running a store and walking in, setting up some computers, and saying I'm open for business.
Right.
There's a lot more to it than that.
There's a lot of research. Like I said, I spent 2 or 3 months with other store owners, with other shop owners, with other employees of other shops. Just do your research. Find out what works, what doesn't work. Talk to your chamber of commerce director. Talk to your development. If you have one of those development commissions or development corporations in your town, talk about it. I remember emailing a chamber of commerce from another town as I was thinking about expanding to the west. And, you know, the chamber never got back to me. Well, told me they didn't really care. So if they didn't care, I didn't care. So I never explored it much more over there. But talk to people. Get a second, third, and fourth opinion. Involve your banker, your lawyer, and all the Indian chiefs, because that's probably what you're going to need to make that leap. And I'm glad I did, but I'm glad I really did my research on it. You've got to put the hard work into the research before you ever turn the key.
Well, great advice, Pat. Great advice. Once again, I really appreciate your time on the Force Field today, and we'll talk to you again sometime again soon. And
I hope
have
so.
A great day.
You bet. Thank you, Rick.
Take care.
Bye
bye. In our next episode, we'll talk with the owner of a computer store who recently expanded and moved his storefront to a new location. We'll learn how he did it and what he had to consider before making the critical decision to invest in such an expansion, as we continue with part 5 of our 6-part series on opening a computer store. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net. or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.